This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Well, we're all watching the US for their midterm election, and it's all over the Israeli press. I think you mentioned last week, Howard, that you were surprised at how much coverage the US midterm elections are getting in the Israeli press when we've had elections of our own to deal with. But I think that there's actually some method in this madness, because sometimes when you focus on somebody else's electoral system and some of the problems that they're experiencing in that electoral system, you kind of appreciate your own a little bit more.
You feel better.
You feel like you're not alone. You know what I'm saying? People are just taking a little bit of refuge from other people's problems and understanding that what we're having to deal with is kind of small in comparison to some of the issues that other countries are dealing with. So I think it's a case of, you know, looking across the pond and forgetting a little bit about some of the issues that we have over here. And of course, there is a great deal of interest to see what transpires in that election.
And of course, that also impacts Israel greatly. The approach, the American approach to Israel, is always something that's important. Although that said, something we've mentioned is that the Biden administration certainly has not been a disappointment to Israel and the relationship that that the countries have.
I think that's true. I think what we're finding, and we'll talk a little bit about, the conversation that Joe Biden had with Prime Minister-elect Netanyahu. I think the Biden administration is well disposed towards Israel. So the midterm election can have an impact on that, to the extent that it may or may not prevent Biden from doing things that he would otherwise wish to do. So sometimes when the Congress is not the same as the president, or not particularly supportive of the president, they could theoretically block certain actions that the administration would like to take because of the fact that they've got this disagreement internally within the U.S. political system.
Right. Well, let's just talk about that. Prime Minister-elect Benjamin Netanyahu finally receives a call from Joe Biden. Was this a concern that this wasn't happening?
Well, there's so much spoken. First of all, I've chosen to call him Prime Minister-elect. Some of the Israeli press are calling him presumed next Prime Minister, which I find somewhat amusing. There was some chatter about the fact that Biden didn't phone Netanyahu sooner than yesterday. Already towards the end of last week, they were wondering why it was that Biden was taking his time and what sort of a message was being sent by this slight delay. Right. But the call came through yesterday. We understand that it lasted all of 8 minutes. And from the from some of the reports that we've seen about the call, apparently the U.S. leader told Netanyahu that we are brothers and we'll make history together. They are clearly brothers from different mothers. There's no doubt about that. If that's even something, and we'll make history together, which means that what Biden was really referring to was that he would be quite enthusiastic about trying to push further the Abraham Accords and trying to potentially include other countries within the Middle East, including them in those accords. And there are certainly other countries that are potentially lining up and that could join the gang of other countries of the Middle Eastern countries that have already normalized their relations with Israel. So, and that's certainly not an empty threat. I think that that's quite feasible if all the conditions around the edges are right. Interesting as well that Prime Minister-elect Netanyahu received a call from Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president. And I just wonder whether Zelensky feels that the Israeli government policy may well change towards Ukraine under the new regime, under the Netanyahu premiership, and whether the relationship with Russia or the sensitivity about the relationship with Russia may be put to one side. I'm really not sure, because we will all remember very keenly that when he was formerly prime minister, Netanyahu had a relatively close relationship with Putin, and he traveled to meet him on a number of occasions. And in fact, Putin was his best friend at one stage, having met Putin more times than any other leader of other countries during a certain period of time. So it's not exactly clear what the new government's policy will be towards Ukraine and towards Russia as well, and how they will see the developing situation in Syria. And there is a developing situation in Syria, because there were reports of quite a lot of activity yesterday and the day before within Syria, Russian troops and apparently Iranian forces moving around and looking to try somehow to defend, create air defenses on a position that Israel is known to have attacked in the past. So we can see that Russia is still very much active in the Syrian battlefield area, and it's not clear how the new Netanyahu-led government will respond to this. Another interesting call that the prime minister-elect received was from President Macron of France. Now, we can't forget the backslapping that went on with Yair Lapid and Macron when Macron was in Paris. When Yair Lapid went to Paris to meet with Macron. Now Macron has reached out to Netanyahu. He's already issued an invitation for him to visit Paris to have talks with Macron. So all of that is very interesting. And I can't help thinking that Israel's standing in the international community has changed so dramatically on the back of the gas issue. It's all about gas right now. The lack of gas in Europe and discoveries of gas in Israel and the production of gas. I just can't help feeling that there is so much about gas within these conversations and these relationships. And I don't have much of an issue with that. If gas is what it's all about, if gas is what's going to bring people together, then let's have a gas out, let's have a party and enjoy the benefits of whatever that might bring.
Well, let's just talk about that, because apparently an additional 13 billion cubic meters of gas has been found in Israeli waters. I have no idea what that means in terms of numbers, really.
Well, just trying to put all of this into perspective. First of all, the new discovery has come in a gas field which is between Karish and Leviathan, which are already gas fields that are producing gas right now. And it's in an area which is called Olympus. This is quite a large area and has quite a number of other gas sites that are potentially going to be discovered. The gas discovery that we've found now is called Athena. That's the new gas site, and it has 13 billion cubic meters of natural gas. Now, Leviathan is the largest of the gas fields that fall within Israeli waters, and appropriately named Leviathan, because Leviathan is the Hebrew word for whale. And of course, the size of the beast, I think, also indicates the size of that particular gas field. 600 billion cubic meters of gas in Leviathan. It's reported to be enough to satisfy Israel's gas needs for 40 years. So that's Leviathan, 600 billion. Now we're talking about Athena, which is approximately 13 billion cubic meters. Athena has only 3.75 billion cubic meters, but the 13 billion cubic meters is in a site called Zeus, all within the Olympus area. So that's approximately 1/40, more or less, of what we've found in Leviathan. So enough for 1 year on that basis, 1 year of Israel's gas needs. But of course, most of this gas is not coming to Israel. A lot of it is being exported, and it's not only about Leviathan, but we also have the Tamar gas field that's currently producing gas, and now we have Karish, which has gone online and producing gas. So hopefully these two new sites that have been discovered, Zeus and Athena, will also come into production. And as I said a little earlier, I think a lot of what's going on in Israel's relations with the international community, and particularly with European countries, in view of the gas shortage in Europe. I think a lot of what's happening right now is all about the gas and the fact that European countries are very enthusiastic to put as much to lay their hands on as much Israeli gas as they possibly can, because that's really the most likely source of at least some of the gas that might replace the loss of the supply of the Russian gas. So this is all very, very interesting.
Can I just understand that? How does this get to Europe? I mean, is there the system, is there a sophisticated enough system that this could alleviate some of Europe's pressure over the winter?
So there has been a lot of talk about building a pipeline to Europe. It doesn't exist at the moment, but there is a lot of talk about this. And I'm guessing that the current crisis that we're seeing in the gas market may well force the issue of the construction of gas pipeline from Israel or from around this area to Europe. There has been talk about cooperation with Cyprus and Greece to try and bring the gas to Europe. And of course, a lot of opposition, particularly from Turkey, that Turkey won't allow the pipeline to cross through its waters, and put Turkey opposed to the gas exploration that's going on in Cyprus, which Turkey feels a little sore about. So the issue of a gas pipeline to Europe is at the moment, unfortunately, stuck in controversy, political controversy, and doesn't exist. So the way that the gas is shipped to Europe is that there are pipelines from the offshore gas fields that bring the gas onshore to Israel through a pipeline. And then most of that gas that goes to Europe is then shipped to a station in Egypt, where the gas is loaded onto tankers and is then shipped to Europe from that location in Egypt. And that's the way that most of this gas will be traveling to Europe, at least in the short term, until such time as a gas pipeline can be agreed upon between the parties and the construction completed.
Yeah, it's really quite amazing how this has changed the landscape completely. Let's talk about President Isaac Herzog. He's committed Israel to zero carbon emissions by 2050. That's very ambitious.
So he has been at the COP27 UN Climate Change Conference, which has opened in the Egyptian resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. And of course, a lot of focus on COP27, who will be there and who will not be there. Some senior leaders initially had said that they won't be there. Then they were forced to change their mind because they were put under pressure to put a little bit more effort into the whole issue of climate change. We understand that French President Emmanuel Macron was there and a few other international leaders, and amongst them Israeli President Isaac Herzog, who was given the opportunity to address the conference yesterday. Apparently he spoke for about 5 minutes, and he did recommit Israel to zero carbon emissions by 2050, which is highly ambitious, particularly when we think about the fact that last year this time at the previous conference, the then Prime Minister Naftali Bennett made certain commitments that were to be undertaken over the course of this last year, none of which have actually been undertaken or have been realized. We have a situation in Israel where the Attorney General has actually prevented the government from pushing a bill through that will enable the reduction of carbon emissions to try to achieve that 2050 target. So at the moment, I would say that Israel is not looking particularly optimistic in terms of its ability to reduce its carbon emissions down to zero. But I think there are some other interesting things that have gone on around the COP27 conference which are worth mentioning. The first of which is a memorandum of understanding has been signed between Jordan, Israel, and the United Arab Emirates, and it revolves around electricity and water production. So what this memorandum of understanding includes is electricity production in Jordan using a solar energy system, a massive solar energy farm that will be set up in the Jordanian desert. And alongside that, as far as the memorandum of understanding is concerned, a desalination plant that will be set up on the coast of northern Israel, another desalination plant, because of course Israel has a number of them in operation already, another desalination plant. And this agreement has been signed with Jordan, and the United Arab Emirates to somehow try to actualize the Abraham Accords and to share resources of electricity production and water production amongst those three countries. This is a non-binding memorandum of understanding, but it does show some cooperation between various countries within the Middle East. And in President Isaac Herzog's address to the conference yesterday, he said that the Middle East has a particular challenge of reducing its carbon emissions down. And so obviously this is an important first step. The other thing which is worth noting about the COP27 conference is that apparently President Isaac Herzog had some words with the Tunisian prime minister, who is also in attendance at COP27. And this created a lot of chatter on Twitter, many Tunisians feeling that this was somehow a way of Tunisia indicating that it will be normalizing relations with Israel. Apparently, they only really swapped a very, very short conversation between the two of them. The Tunisian prime minister apparently smiled quite sweetly when she spoke to President Isaac Herzog. A lot of people made their own interpretations of that situation. So all in all, I think a very, very interesting start to the conference in Sharm el-Sheikh.
And that's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report. It's 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.